Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, I'm here today with a man who was involved 40 years ago in the making of Octopussy. And his name is Del Singh, and he's a great lad, and he's here to tell us all about what that was like. So, Del, welcome to the show.
Thomas, thank you very much. I like that he's a great lad. I'm 60 years old, so thank you very much. I'm
older than you.
Thank you. And I suppose if I'm going to do the proper intro, I can say the name is Singh, Del Singh, licensed to tie turbans.
Right. Well, that gives away a little bit of your involvement. So, I mean, how on earth did you get involved to be on the production of a massive Bond film?
Yeah, so it's a bizarre. I mean, the getting involved is as bizarre as the actual job title itself. But let me explain. So I, born and bred in Peterborough, lived here all my life. Back in 1982, I was a kind of sprightly 19, coming on 20-year-old, ready to go off to kind of university. But one of the things that I and two of my brothers were doing at the time was we were running, and I challenge anyone, if anybody can actually come up with challenge this, then I they can have some money off me. But I don't think anywhere in Peterborough, the world, the universe, there were three Sikh lads doing a heavy metal disco roadshow. It really is one of those bizarre things. I mean, so as bizarre as it was, so we used to run these the Singh Brothers rock road shows were quite legendary. We used to kind of be going out there and sort of taste some of our music. So we were kind of putting these things on at village halls and stuff, because back in the day there weren't sort of really clubs for this sort of music, and so we would go out at night to illegally fly post. I believe the statute of limitations has probably gone on that, so I'm not going to get qualified now. But we'd go literally sort of pull up, and where a lot of building sites, we'd go out there with a bucket of paste, put a poster up, there you go, and nip off for, you know, got our collars felt. We were also in the Yellow Pages, Singh Brothers discos. We did heavy metal road shows. We also do kind of weddings, funerals, bar mitzvahs, anything else you wanted as well, without the heavy metal stuff. And people book discos up over the phone. And one evening, sitting at home, we get a phone call. Is that Singh Brothers Roadshow? Yes, it is. How can I help you? Thinking this guy wants to book a disco. And the first question he asks is, are you a Sikh? And I'm like, yeah. Because the name Singh is synonymous with Sikh. So, and then the next question is, you know, bizarre, do you wear a turban? I'm like, yeah. Now, what's this got to do with you booking a disco? And, you know, back in the day, we used to occasionally get some abuse from the National Front and stuff like that. So I thought this guy's going to give us some grief. So I'll tell him to go and do one before he tells me. But he goes, and before he said that, he goes, no, well, actually, I don't want to book a disco, but I'm friendly with Eon Productions. And I'm being a big Bond fan back from the Sean Connery days and stuff and whatever. I sort of said to him, well, when he said, Eon, you're the guys that make James Bond films. Yep. So what are you after? And he said, well, we need your help, and we need somebody who can tie a turban. why. And he sort of mentioned, look, in the film, we've got an actor, Indian actor, doesn't wear a turban in real life, but he actually plays a kind of henchman, and he needs to have a turban. We need a turban tire, or, you know, somebody who's an expert. In fact, the title became Turban Expert. And I was like, yeah, I'm up for that. I mean, obviously, the idea of being in a Bond film was quite something. And then, you know, there was the potential of earning some money as well. And it was summer holidays before I went off to uni, so a bit of extra pocket money wouldn't go amiss. And I remember my brother and I turned up at this hotel the next day, still thinking it's going to be a wind-up. We thought this is going to be some sort of sick joke somebody's played on us amongst our soon-to-be ex-mates. It all kind of got quite real when we got sort of shown up to this top of the hotel where they're taking that entire floor, walked into this room, and kind of one side of the room, you know, the eyes are immediately drawn to this big smoke, puff of smoke going up, and underneath it is Roger Moore with a massive cigar.
Oh, you think,
geez, that's 007 over there. And and then Kabir Bedi comes striding across, really tall, handsome guy. Along come the costume people and stuff, and they were like, you know, so introduced us and so on. And then they pulled out this piece of cloth and said, can you tie this on his head? And I said, no. And they all looked at us, said, sorry, you said you could tie a turban. They're getting quite embarrassed. I mean, we're wearing turbans. I said, I could tie a turban, but that's a bath towel.
All right.
I can't tie that on his head. It's like, it's about 6 foot long. It's a bath towel. Proper turban's about 13 foot long plus.
Yeah.
As it happens, I'd bought a turban with me. Took it out of the bag. It happened to be one of my great school turbans. And so I proceeded to tie this on his head. And when it went on, it looked absolutely magnificent. And, it, you know, because he's a big guy, so it layered on nicely and it looked good. And then he started moving around. He said, it's not going anywhere. It's not moving. It looks good and it feels good. And, you know, I like this. And they were like, great. You know, you're hired. It's £50 a day. Pretty good for 1982, and especially now the extras are getting about 20, 25 quid a day or something like that, I think. So I thought we're getting some decent money here. So I was a skilled profession. But they said, you know, we only need one of you. I said, well, actually, we only come as a team. It's Singh Brothers. And the main reason we did that was, not that I agreed, it's because both my brother and I had summer jobs working at a local coal store freezing vegetables. Sounds really just as exotic. And we knew that if one of us was on shift, the other could do the job and vice versa. And so we sort of said, sorry, we come as a team. And they said, well, okay, then fine, you both get the gig and it's £25 each. And I'm like, no, nah, stop. Just up to 50, so it's 50 each. And they're like, no, we can't do that. You know, 50 each, too much, sorry. And I'm like, thank you very much. Kabir took turban off. I said, I'll put it in my bag. We're going, bye. Good luck finding another person. And they literally looked at each other. And Kabir just sort of started, as we were walking towards the door, Kabir stopped them and said, no. I want these guys. And they came over. Yeah, and they came over and said, look, we're going to do this. And I said, look, I'm not being funny, but, you know, we know what our worth is and stuff, and you are going to struggle to find anybody else that can do this. We kind of got that gig, and both of us got it, and it just meant that we would turn up on set. And as it happens, the way everything fell that month, my brother was kind of like pretty much doing day shifts, and I was doing night shifts. We got to the point where I would literally do the job. He wouldn't be there, and I'd often clock in for him. I'd just say, and we just collect the money, and it was all good, and it was fine. But the nice thing is, I had access all areas, unlike the others, and so I could, unlike the extras and so on, who had to kind of stay to one side. I had access to all areas. So the thing is, you know, I'd go in the morning, you know, and you look at the call sheets and you say Turban Expert on location 7:45. So they named me Turban Expert. So, and I'd take the kind of 5 or 6 minutes to tie the turban. And the interesting story about the turban itself was that originally the costume department had actually put together, the bath towel they bought, or whatever it was, that was kind of like a slightly reddish color. And a dark reddish colour, and they were going to do that, and they coordinated that to go with the dark suit. You know, when I put the grey turban on, it didn't really go with the dark suit, and Kabir said, I want this turban, and it looks good. They asked me if I had one that was similar to that colour. I said, no, I don't. I don't kind of wear these turbans, that sort of colour. So they said, Kabir wants, I want this turban, and they went and had to re-coordinate his suit. So the suit he wears on the fight scene on the train was coordinated to go with the turban, which is a grey suit, and he looks magnificent in it. It's quite funny because I actually kind of ribbed him a bit about this and so on. He didn't get my sense of humour at first, but he did eventually. I said, Kabir, probably did you a massive favour because you look really smart in this. I said, just imagine if I hadn't turned up with this turban, you'd been wearing that big red thing on your head. And I said, looking like I do with skin color, you just look like a Swan Vestas, like a match. And you know, all Bond has to do is strike you against a wall and watch your head explode. He was just wetting himself laughing. Like, he was like, you know, he didn't get my humor at first, but he got it.
No.
But somebody that did get my humor was certainly Roger. I mean, because I found I was literally, once I'd done the 5-10 minute job, you know, so the next day it would be a 10 minute job because continuity coming with the Polaroids from the previous day and check to see the turban looked the same and it kind of had the same kind of shape and whatever. But once I was done, I was pretty much there for the day, and they were the idea that it might fall off, which it never did. And so what I did was I'd literally sort of sit around Kabir's trailer. Roger's trailer was directly opposite. He'd normally be outside sitting on the step with a cigar. And so I, you know, would make it my business to go over and talk to him. I was a little shy at first. I thought, you know, megastar guy, but I've never been shy at doing these things. And I thought to myself, I don't want to come across as a fanboy, so I'm not going to go and sort of say, oh, Mr. Moore, you know, I really loved you for years and years and years. I used to watch you in The Saint. So I just used a different tack, which was a genuine thing, which was my favourite actor of all time was Richard Burton. And I kind of walked over to him and Roger, I'm not interrupting, because no, not at all. And I said, I just wanted to know what it was like working with Richard Burton. He was my favourite actor. And I just, you know, how was it on The Wild Geese? And, you know, he said, actually, Richard's an amazing actor, but one Richard is good, but when you put two Richards together, and he meant Harris, he goes, there was a recipe for disaster, because they're both in the film and they both had severe drink issues, or they liked to drop. And so he said, you know, we did struggle with getting things done in a timely fashion because these guys invariably wouldn't be on set or there'd be problems with it and whatever. I said, but the end product is magnificent. He said, well, actually, the film got good reception. It was good. And I think it still remains one of my favorites. I think it's great. I'm not so keen on the sequel, but the first one was terrific. From there, we kind of struck up a thing because, you know, I'm a bit of a film movie buff. And, you know, I then sort of had like a follow-up question, which is a bit loaded. I sort of said to him, got to ask you the question, you know, because he knew films and stuff as well. So I sort of said, you know, what's your favourite film? And he was like, put me on the spot. He goes, you've asked that question, so chances are you know what yours is. And I said, yes, I do. And I told him it was the 39 Steps, the Hitchcock version, which he said is brilliant. Robert De Niro, Madeline Carroll. After a few minutes, he had time to think, and he said, okay. He goes, you know, if I've got to pick one, he goes, there's lots. But I said, I know the feeling. And he said, well, I'll probably go with High Noon. Really? And I was like, great choice. And I remember saying to him, you know what, if they ever did a remake, and you know, you could do the Gary Cooper bit brilliantly.
Yeah, he could.
He just leaned into me, and that voice said, something should never be remade.
Oh, right.
And you know, I actually kind of agree with him. You know, that there certainly are some films that should never be retouched, and maybe High Noon is one of those classics. But we developed a great rapport. He'd always acknowledge me in the mornings. I would acknowledge him. We'd have a chat, whatever it was. And he just had this lovely, self-deprecating sense of humour. Just didn't take himself seriously, which wound the journalists up great, because at the time, obviously, Warners were bringing back Sean Bond.
Yeah.
But Never Say Never Again. And they would always try to goad him. They were like, Roger, is it a case the public doesn't like your Bond? They're bringing Sean back. And he was like, very magnanimous. He said, look, Sean is superb. And I'd even said to him, Sean was my first Bond and still as Bond, but, you know, you're good too, in a very different way. And he sort of said, yeah, well, I try to make my Bond different because we can't all be Sean Connery. And there's a lot of, you know, license there that Ian Fleming has given to this character. And I try to exploit different elements of that with my personality. And I remember when there were some journalists there from Scandinavia and Germany, and I remember one of them was saying this and goading him, and he said, well, actually, you know, well, there's things that Sean can do I can't, and there's certainly things that I can do that Sean can't. And they were like, go on then, so what is it you can do that Sean can't? And they were looking for a real tidbit of scandal here. And he said, well, they leaned in, and he said, watch this. And he did that eyebrow raise.
Yeah.
And Sean can't do that. And they literally just collapsed, and I was pissing myself. Sorry, I was quite kind of, you know, in apoplexy, thinking that's so funny. And they just cut them to the quick. But like I said, a real gentleman, real gentleman.
That's so nice to hear, because we've spoken to quite a few of the cast and crew in some of these Roger films, and we're yet to find anyone who hasn't said what a lovely guy he was, that he was approachable. And even, I mean, to be fair, they say the same with Sean, you know, that almost the bigger the star. Yeah. The more humble they are, the more, I suppose, they're concentrating. They've got the whole film on the shoulders. They sort of, they've got to have that personality where you're looking after them.
Well, I think, to be fair, I mean, the person I had the weight in the shoulders was probably John Glenn, because I really didn't, I was really scared of talking to John Glenn. I mean, he was a man with a mission. He was juggling, kind of spinning multiple plates and doing crazy stuff. So, I was damn scared to go near him and sort of talk to him, and I owned that I wanted to. But he was always busy, and there were people following him around with clipboards and stuff. And so you think, keep me out of your way. But Roger was just terrific. And because he had downtime, and there was quite a bit of downtime, we were there for about 3 weeks. And then I was there for another week or so with the stunt guys and stuff, the second unit. It's because he had quite a lot of downtime. We did have some crappy weather, and there were some things that weren't going right. And so he did sort of take a bit of time. And like I said, he was very approachable. And I think also sometimes it's a case of a lot of stars are very approachable in the right instance and the right way. But I'd imagine if you're kind of invading their privacy, or if you're just being a nuisance and stuff, you know, you can get on their wick. So I'd imagine there must have been a point where Roger probably felt that as well. But I'm glad to say I didn't wind him up the wrong way.
Good, good.
Action. This is John Glenn. You're listening to Really 007 Podcast.
Kabir Bedi, of course. I mean, he's Indian, but I take it he isn't a Sikh. So is that what you brought on?
Yeah, so Kabir is he's Indian, and the name Bedi actually does resonate with Sikhs, but also some Hindus are called Bedi. But I think, you know, he comes from that part of that lineage that is a Sikh lineage, but he doesn't wear a turban in real life. And again, you know, he was an actor that I hadn't really come across, and he was a massive in places like Italy, where he'd done this thing called Sandokan the Pirates, which was a spaghetti buccaneer thing, so not quite spaghetti western, but it was one of those things, which probably explains why he's huge in Italy now. He recently did their Big Brother.
It's brilliant.
and they love him, and he speaks Italian fluently, and he's brilliant. And so, yeah, he was well known for that. He'd done a couple of other things, and then obviously he got pulled into this film, Octopussy, which really propelled him, because all of a sudden he got attention to Hollywood, and he was signed up to do Dynasty, or as Americans say, Dynasty, but right. Dynasty, the spin-off from Dallas as well. So, you know, and again, he just a fine, fine man. You know, as I said, when we first got there, I was a bit nervous, because, you know, I've got a more Western sense of humour, being born in the UK. And some of the stuff I said kind of went over his head, and I was thinking maybe some of this isn't going to resonate. But after a little while, he got the measure of me, and he realised when I was kind of like having a joke and when I wasn't. But again, you know, it was terrific. He was like, you know, mi casa su casa, this is your trailer, you can do what you like here, and whatever. He'd always inquire, you know, have you eaten? And I've had lunch and so on. In fact, I've been up twice. But, you know, I've eaten. He was always, you know, just really a very caring sort of person, which I think was brilliant.
That's so good to hear again. And I mean, so you did the turban stuff, but then is it right that you basically just had free reign to hang around and watch the scenes be filmed? And
pretty much that's it. It was exactly that. It was very much along the lines of, you know, once you've done this, you can't leave the confines of the set, because in case his turban comes off.
Yeah, of course.
But you're literally free to go. So unlike the extras, the poor chaps that, yes, they might get, you know, the back of their head in a shot somewhere, but they've got to stand out there in rain and shine, because when it started chucking it or whatever, they would huddle somewhere. We could come inside. They couldn't. And I had access to the kind of what I call the VIP kind of lunch bus. You could go on board and do that, and they were getting the kind of like sort of something chucked out of a bucket into it. No, it wasn't that bad. No. They would get the kind of less favourable meals. But it was really good. And so, like, I hung around, obviously watched a fair amount of filming going on, and there were some bits that I watched with the filming that were quite amazing, like the car. So the bit in the film where the car is hit by the train on the tracks and it's launched into the air and lands in the lake with it on top of the boat where the fishermen are. I mean, that stunt was quite something, because this was done pre-CGI.
Yeah.
So, you know, nowadays you just literally computer animate that and people would be going, ooh. Whereas back then, you literally, to get that effect, what they did was they had to put a Hulk, about seven or eight of these Mercedes cars with all the engines stripped out, but they still looked like a ton worth of hunk of metal, into what was a cannon, and fire it over the top of the train and drop it. And they did it a couple of times, and it was that second take where it literally, when it hits the boat and so on, you think to yourself, the first stuntman kind of got out, and the second one doesn't look like he's made it. And, you know, everybody's like, and then they come back to it and see that, you know, he's out as well. And that's it. And then there was the Martin Grace, who won Roger's stuntman, who sadly got seriously injured because there was a stanchion. I mean, they took the train down particularly, and they took it down a bit that wasn't really, they hadn't been to before, and there was a stanchion in the way, and he was hanging off the side, and this thing literally, even at a decent, not a big speed, but a decent enough speed, caught him on the arm and the side, and it sort of wrecked his hip, broke his arm, collarbone. And he was in hospital for 6 months. I mean, I remember sort of the ambulances coming to pick him up for that, and that was an awful one. I mean, there was that, and then there's obviously, you know, one must try these things as sort of as a 19-year-old, you know, very hormonal with all these Bond girls around. You know, it wasn't. I mean, the interesting thing was, I mean, I had this huge crush. I mean, the Bond girls, they were lovely, but they were there as Bond girls, and a few of them knew that guys are going to kind of like kind of.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Lech over them. That's just the way things were. The one who I thought was most demure, Maud Adams was hard, not that approachable. She'd obviously been in a Bond film before. She kind of, to me, seemed a little bit cold. I mean, I'm sure she's a lovely person, but she was just not that approachable. Maybe I was just scared because she was kind of, you know. But the one that I had this massive crush on was Christina Weyborn.
Oh, yeah.
And Christina was beautiful, and you know, but and standing near her, it was just get a photo done and just being around, having a quick chat and whatever. It was lovely. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about what's happened this weekend, the 43 reunion.
Yes, but, so you were there.
The highlight for me, I mean, has been meeting Christina again and telling her I had a crush on her. And her, just she and I just literally hit it off. So, we, like I said, we just had the 40th anniversary of Octopussy here in Peterborough, organised by Martin Mulder and Anders Frey and Mark Hernandez and myself. So the four of us were kind of organising it. You know, it's remarkable. You know, 150-plus tickets all sold out within a couple of days, and they weren't cheap. It was a couple hundred pounds a pop, travelling hotels and stuff on top of that. So people spent a good amount of money, but it was terrific. And we, you know, we had the. I'm a fan of Peterborough. So I love Peterborough, so it's great to welcome people here. We had beautiful weather, unlike a lot of the typical Bond kind of get-togethers and stuff that happen around a studio or a hotel environment. You know, we were at Wansford Station, the steam railway station where the filming was done. You know, they'd gone to a lot of trouble. They brought out the steam engines and stuff that were used in the film. There were tours down the line. We went, you know, to where bits were filmed. We went on the steam train with us, ourselves and the VIP guests, you know, 7 miles down the track to Orton Mere, which is where there were the lock gates, where the opening sequence was shot, where Andy Bradford, stuntman, who's 009, yeah, where in the clown costume goes running up and he's trying to climb what looks like a gate, and it's actually the lock where the water is. One of the Mayer twins kind of like nails him with a knife in the back or something. He runs on and then he kind of like crashes through that restaurant window or something, and that's it. You know, and Andy was there, and in fact, a typical stunt, you can't take the stunt out of stuntman. So the guy puts on a red nose and goes climbing around this flipping thing. I'm thinking, shit, there's no health and safety here to watch you, mate, but be careful. And, you know, we had a good number of VIP guests. So John Glenn, it was magnificent seeing John Glenn. And I did talk to him a lot this time, but he's 91 now. So, you know, 40 years on from, you know, 51 when the film was made. It's obviously 91 now. And really talkative, really lucid, you know, asking some questions on the train journey down the line about, you know, his inspirations for directors, and Hitchcock's name came up a couple of times. He cut to how he could mix comedy in with action and suspense and everything. And he said, you know, trying to emulate some of that, you know, bringing that, some of that into Bond was really important for him, and particularly the humour. And I think he said he liked that, the way that, you know, Hitchcock would do some of that sort of stuff in films where so that was really good. And as I said, I mean, for me, the Mayer twins are really good. Tony and David, yeah. Obviously, getting on a bit now, but again, still, I mean, they're a font of knowledge about films. They just know
everything
about films. I mean, it was great. I could spend just an evening with them just chatting movies. A couple of the Bond girls there. So there was Safira there. There was Helene. There was Alison there. So they were there. But of course, for me, it was Christina. So Christina and I literally hit it off. And she did, I don't say this lightly, but when she left, she said, this was the best. And she goes, you know what? I really enjoyed it because we just got on and you made this so much fun. On the evening of Saturday night, we had a gala dinner. So we had this, all the stuff at the station in the daytime. And the evening, we went back to the hotel in Peterborough where there was a gala dinner. You know, apart from the food, there was some entertainment. So there was a knife throwing act in there. It wasn't the Mayer twins, I have to say, because I think their aim would have been a bit cockeyed now. But it was a knife throwing act, which still got me thinking, oh, God, that's a bit too risky. A lovely Q&A with John and some of the other cast and crew and stuff, which was quite nice, and even a Q&A with me, and I got to tell people my story, because I think most people there knew who I was because I've appeared on some of these kind of podcasts and so on. It was quite surreal, people approaching me asking for my autograph, which was like, okay.
Yeah, fine. Nice, yeah.
I know, don't let get your head dealt. And there was one lady, God bless her, who came up to me and said, I love that bit in the film where you crush the dice.
So she thought you were Kabir.
I was Kabir Petty. So I was like,
that's flattering, isn't it, Del?
It's flattering, but it just meant, I said, you know, unless Kabir Petty got sort of shrunk in the wash by about 2 foot, you know, I'm not quite, I can't even pass as a mini me version of him. So I explained to her what I did, and she was like, oh, okay, look, you know, so. I think it was her husband that was probably a bit more the Bond fan. I think, I'm not sure she was. But anyway, so it was quite funny. And then at the end of the evening, I managed to sort of, watch some clips of films and montage, including some footage that had been shot on Super 8 at the time with no volume on it. But it was quite something to see some stuff, old stuff, which none of these guys had seen before. And then I got to do, put some 80s music on to almost do a little bit of a disco at the end of it. So bringing me back around to where I kind of came in. But with Christina, it was fun. So when everybody was dressed up in their glam stuff, and somebody, one of the organisers, gave Christina an octopus tattoo, you know, and in the film where Maud says or whatever says, that's my little octopus.
Yeah, yeah.
Christina has to put this tattoo on. She goes to me, Del, I need to go to the kind of like restroom to put this on. Where's the restroom? I said, okay, cause it's a bit further down. So I kind of took her there. I said, it's there. And she goes, how do I put this on? I said, okay, I'll open the bag up. And I said, there's instructions on it. And she goes, I've got no glasses. I can't read that. I said, well, I've got my glasses. I read it. And I just sort of said, you peel the film off, you put it. And she was putting it just about here. So just literally just there. And she goes, I put some water on it and then give it a few minutes, peel that off, and it should be okay. And you've got to let it dry. And she goes, okay. She goes, I'm not going to be able to do that. She goes, can you give me a hand? I'm like, okay. But I said, I can't go into the ladies with you. I mean, my wife's in the other room, by the way. Yeah, so she's there with me. And there's hotel stuff. So we actually got a disabled toilet there. And so I opened the door on this. And I said, look, there's water and everything there so we can do this. So with this door open, I'm standing there doing this, you know, she's putting this tattoo on. I'm standing there, people kind of walking by looking at this toilet with this gorgeous blonde lady and a guy in a suit and a turban, kind of like, you know, kind of really close up close and personal. And then we get this tattoo on, and with people looking, including the hotel staff, and I'm thinking, this is looking bizarre, because she said, do you want to close the door? I said, no, close the door. It's going to go mad. Yeah, they're going to call for security. We'll both get chucked out of here. This will make the papers tomorrow. And then she goes, okay, and peel the thing off, and the tattoo's on now. I said, that's great, the tattoo's on. She goes, yeah, but it feels wet. And there's only hand towels there, no dryer. So she goes, just blow on it. I goes, what? She goes, blow on it. So I'm now literally leaning into her chest, into her bosom, and I'm blowing. And this procession of people, because there's a wedding reception next door, and all these people, including their kids, are walking past. And she's looking over, she goes, I think we might be in trouble. And I look over, and all these people stop there looking at us, like, you know, what the hell is going on here? And I was like, Christine, I've got to get out of here, girl. You're going to get me into trouble. And we were just laughing like a drain. We walked out of that place. And I had to go and tell my wife, I goes, by the way, that tattoo, I just put that on. And I've been. If anybody says, you know, they saw me blowing on her there, that was me, yeah.
Yeah,
Dear me. This is the Really 007 podcast. My name is David Meyer, and I played Grishka in Octopussy.
Really 007 podcast. This is Tony Meyer, plays Mishka in Octopussy. The knife-throwing twins. You've got us both.
And this is for my brother, Grishka.
Thank you.
I mean, amazing how you've come from just randomly, almost by fate, getting the gig to 40 years later doing this and meeting all these people. I mean, it's the love of the film, isn't it? I mean, it is one of our favourite Bond films, and it stood the test of time as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, I think the whole thing is, and I mean, it's the franchise itself. I don't think there's many other movies. I mean, there's a lot of people that made a movie or got asked to star in it or be an extra in it or do something for it. And they probably don't have reunions every 10, 20, 30, 40 years because just this franchise. And also the craziness about it is, you know, I consider myself to be a Bond fan, but the people that were there, God love them, and this is not meant derogatory fashion, but fanatical. Some of the stuff they turned up with, I mean, there were photos there. They asked John Glenn to sign that he'd not seen. And they were kind of like, so he was like, where the hell do you get that? And, you know, they had replica models of cars and stuff and imagery and stuff. And it was amazing. They spent a lot of money as well. So it's obviously more than just a passing fancy. It's like really, really serious about it. And God love them. They're brilliant. They're lovely people. And so, like I said, this thing is a life of its own. And when it comes to the film, to your point, I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know, obviously, I was a Sean fan. I think every Bond's first film is amazing.
Yeah.
They then maybe have a little up and a down. That's the way things are. You know, I did think to myself after I saw kind of Octopussy, it maybe isn't my favorite Bond film, and it wasn't my favorite Bond film. And I thought, that was there. That was okay. That was a bit too comedic. That was whatever. But there were bits in it. Now, that was in 1983 when it first came out. But over the years, and with the release of a number of films with things like invisible cars in them, which took the whole thing a bit too nuts. Octopussy became a very sensible movie. It could happen. It was, and that whole premise, of, you know, somebody, some demented Russian general taking a bomb over to, you know, from the east to the west to explode it and start the war. That stuff could happen today, for heaven's sake, with what's happening in Ukraine. So it's not as wild and as far-fetched as it seemed. And so, yes, it grew on me, became more and more of a favourite. And then obviously started getting calls from, God damn it, people like you, asking me to talk about it. The screenings of the film, where I was asked to talk about it. It was amazing. And so when I know when Roger passed in 2017, I wrote a little piece on my LinkedIn social media business, my summer with Roger, just a little recollection. And The Guardian newspaper contacted me and said, this is really nice. Could we take it, put it in The Guardian? Yeah, right. And they put it in The Guardian, and then, you know, somebody contacts me and says, I'm putting together a screening of the film in London. I'd love you to come along and tell your story there. Oh. And the amazing thing, going back to Kabir, was when Kabir and I parted company, he wrote his address and phone number for me on a piece of paper and gave it to me in Beverly Hills. It was great. Sadly, I went off to university into a life of, I wasn't gonna say sex, drugs and rock and roll, but it's actually sex, alcohol and rock and roll. You can delete some of these afterwards. And just leave in the sex, please. Yes. And so that's it. The rest I don't need. And I immediately lost this piece of paper. And that was it. So I lost contact with him. And, you know, bizarrely enough, it must have been 30 years later, you know, I've got books in the loft for my degree in genetic engineering. My wife was saying, you're never going to do cellular molecular biology again. Get rid of this crap. And I'm like, no, seriously. Initially, no, get rid of this crap. I'm like, okay. So I'm taking these books out and a piece of paper falls out. And of course, it's got Kabir's name and everything on it. And I'm wondering to myself, so I think, okay, then was that phone works? So I get to the phone, actually dial the number and it's dead.
Yeah, 30 years is a long time.
30 years long. But 5 years later, at the screening in London, of course, one of the guys that organises it only gets Kabir on a Skype call with me at the end of the show.
Brilliant.
So he and I make kind of a reacquaintance again, and we have a really nice chat, and he's talking about how great things were on the set and the memories and stuff. So, yeah, and sadly, he couldn't be at the reunion because he's on a book tour and he's in Spain at the moment. He said, had it been any other time, he goes, I would have come over in a heartbeat.
Well, let's hope we can get to the 50th anniversary.
Well, let's hope so. Yeah, that'd be lovely. I'd love to see John Glenn at 101, really, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, so he's doing well, isn't he, for 91?
He's doing very well, and he was very, very lucid and very competent and just chatting away, walking around. Both his two of his sons there, Andrew and Matthew, were there as well. They're both in the industry. So, yeah, there were a good amount of also people from the editing, the special effects.
Yeah.
So John Richardson, people like that. There's a load of people there. So, you know, there's quite a few too many to mention, but it was lovely. And I think The nice thing for me was that as one of the kind of co-organizers of the thing was the reaction for the people, because people kept saying to me, you know, have you enjoyed yourself? It's been a good time. And I said, actually, I have. But the biggest, the most satisfying thing is that you guys are enjoying yourselves. Yeah. Are you enjoying yourselves? And people were saying, absolutely. They said, this thing, you know, as I said, it's not set in a hotel. So we're out indoors, we're doing stuff, a lot of activities and stuff and whatever. A lovely setting. And I think people loved it, you know. So, I mean, and the weather was so kind to us. It was beautifully warm. And so people were like, yeah, this is amongst one of the best Bond things we've ever been to. Oh, can't wait for the next one.
That's so good. I mean, yeah, we're gutted we missed it. We were a little bit too late for the tickets. But even online, seeing, you know, on Bond fan sites on Facebook and Twitter and this, the amount of reaction it's got, even just people seeing videos of, whoa, these are the actual, there's Christina Weyborn, there's John Glenn. Yeah. They're like, this is incredible. And to see them where it was filmed, I know Stephen Berkoff was meant to come as well, but
Stephen last minute wasn't able to be there, which is very disappointing because I actually really like Stephen. I've seen him in not just Bond roles, but in some classical roles. And I think he scares the shit out of me, to be fair.
Still today, yeah.
But he is very authoritative and great. So sadly, he couldn't. And it's just one of those things. I mean, you know, I think we've got a really good showing of all the people that we booked up. That, you know, they all came up. You know, there was a short video put together of people like Maud and a few others who would have liked to have been there but couldn't be there. So they sort of sent messages to say they couldn't. And we had a lovely little piece as well of a remembrance as well of those people who were involved in the film that couldn't make it, from, you know, like Martin Grace and the stuntman and so on, through right through to other people in production, and of course, you know, Roger as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good, Del. Thank you so much for spending time with us and telling us about this, because the fans love hearing these stories, just that insight to what it was like 40 years ago, and to celebrate everything to do with Octopussy, which we are obsessed with. So it's class.
Okay, Thomas, let me add one other thing in here. So the other thing is that there was also a book launch happened on the day as well, on the Saturday. And it's my good friend Mark Hernandez, who he's a Bond head as well. So and he took it to another level, because what he did was he's connected with the Nene Valley Railway too. So what he did was as a bit of a labour of love over the last 2-3 years, he went out to try to find people that were there at the time. I mean, he was only 9 years old when this was made. So he took it upon himself to find extras, people like myself involved in the film, to get around to cast and crew and others and whatever, get their memories, get their photos, put them together. And he's created a fabulous book called On the Train Tracks, filming of Octopussy and GoldenEye, because GoldenEye also had sections filmed at Nene Valley Railway. That book is, I mean, it's terrific. I mean, everybody that came pretty much bought a copy of it. So it was great stuff. So look out for that. It's going to be probably on Amazon and bookstores or whatever it is, but it's great. I mean, I'm chapter 18 is me, Turban Tire for Hire.
Excellent. I
got to sign people's books. They all asked me, could you sign that bit there? And I was whatever. So I signed it with my message of no time to tie.
Very good.
Exactly. You've got to think of this stuff spontaneously. So, I mean, again, you know, if folks want to learn more about Octopussy, what happened, it's a great coffee table book. It's a terrific read. You know, I started looking at it last night. I was a bit tired, but I started looking at it last night and picking out people and places and reading some of the stories that they had to say about the filming, which is remarkable. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. It'd make a nice Father's Day gift or whatever it is. It's called On the Train Tracks.
We'll definitely promote that, Del. And it is the stories that dwell on, you know, that we can sort of go back to and look at these films, that this is 40 years old, franchise is 60. Let's hope we get a new one fairly soon. But until then,
we hope so.
You know, right?
We hope so.
Brilliant, Del.
You can hear loads of our other episodes on iTunes, Spotify, and our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, special episodes, and reviews of all the Bond films. Simply search Really 007 Pod, and you should find loads of weird and wonderful content.
Remember, you're only president for life.
Really 007.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.